We are recording. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Crypto Science Society podcast. I am Jason Cordova. With me is Janae Conrad, and together we are your guides to the archives of the Crypto Science Society, an organization dedicated to the study of strange and unusual phenomena. With us today is our very special guest, Werewolf Radar podcast co-host and international advisory committee member and founding vice president, actual funny guy, Jordan Dahl.
Hello.
I love the titles, Jason. They make me laugh.
We have, yes, what is an organization without titles?
That's and they were all super true too. Just
They're
got
very
my
true.
international funny guy card. I'm international in that too.
Yes.
Nice.
Yep.
What countries have you been funny in?
Canada, and I was in Mexico, but I'm not sure I was especially funny down there.
Well, that it's a different kind of funny.
It is.
Cultural differences get to the
Sure.
dance.
Sure. Yeah, also I was like 14 at the time, and I've never met a funny 14-year-old.
Oh, well, that was before you were funny.
Yeah. No, I well, yes. I can admit that.
Pre-funny, Jordan.
Sure. It all
What
happened. It all happened when I was 21, and I found that bow tie in the street.
Well, it's a good thing you're here.
I'm glad to be here.
Because we're talking about our adventures sleeping with the dead at
Sure.
the Silver Cliff Cemetery.
I was told I'm no longer allowed to do that. It was made very clear to me.
Well, this time we got permission.
That's true. I remember it well, with a chill down my spine.
It was kind of cold.
It was kind of cold.
It was kind of cold. That's what happens when you're out. It was springtime, I believe, wasn't it?
Sure, but it was like a, those Colorado Springs can be harsh.
Colorado Springs are brutal.
They come in sideways.
Everybody, all the folks moving here from Colorado, warning, beginner's guide. The winter is not over. Winter starts in the spring.
Beginner's guide, the first spring is a trick.
And oh, that's cute. You planted your garden before Mother's Day.
Because it'll do that. It'll seem like it's warming up, but that's the winter laying a trap to get you to go outside so it can sink its icy fangs into you.
And then bam, it's
Bam.
got you.
Bam, second winter.
Luckily, it only lasts for a couple days.
Sure.
Yeah. How are the winters in California now?
I gotta say, it's been a little cold lately, and usually I'm of the mind that I really miss Colorado, and a good winter storm. I miss the snow, I miss all of that, but recently it's been a little chilly in California, and my only reaction has been, this is bullshit. What am I even doing here?
I was told that it was sunny all the time.
Yeah, right? I came here to surf.
I've never surfed before.
Nor I.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's too
It's
cold.
always a little cold.
Too cold. Just too cold. Well, get your snowboard out on the beach and
Yeah.
take care of it. So, why is Silver Cliff Cemetery such an interesting place? Why did we spend a night with all our equipment in this spooky place west of Pueblo? Because in a number of sources, people have reported seeing spook lights, strange multicolored orbs of light dancing in between the gravestones and the two cemeteries themselves. Our main source report for this episode is Haunted Colorado, the Silver Cliff Cemetery legend of the ghost lights investigated by Alejandro Rojas. He is advisor general of the CSS International Advisory Committee, host of the Open Minds UFO radio podcast, and co-organizer of the International UFO Congress. He and I also happen to share some DNA. He is
on the weekends. We have a big jar of it.
He is the son of my father's sister. So that makes us cousins.
Good to know, just in case we want to like get into your background and steal your
right. Identity. For the fans, for all of our multitude of 8 followers now, including Jordan.
Hell yeah.
So before we dive into it, does anybody have any thoughts or reflections of like stuff leading up to it? What do you recall knowing about Silvercliff before we went out?
Nothing.
Yeah, very little. I knew that there was a pizza place in my hometown of Eagle, Colorado that had moved to Silvercliff. And it is, to date, the best pizza I've ever had in my life. And so I was excited to see if that restaurant was open. And it was not.
And it was not. It moved from Eagle to Silvercliff. And then they shut down.
Well, I mean, I think it's still in operation.
Oh, it wasn't open when
But it wasn't open because we went in the dead of night.
Yeah, right.
Like a bunch of creeps.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we didn't get there till late.
Totally.
It was, yeah. There was no... But was the moon even up yet when we got there? It was... I feel like it was dark by the time we got in.
I feel like it was coming off.
Yeah, we had like a little bit of time because I know we were rushing through like interviews and things like that before starting our investigation.
Yeah, right. We'll get to that.
Rule number one.
Yes. So anyway, and for those
all the things we learned.
This was actually our very first expedition and full-on investigation. So what is to follow is a kind of a lot of how to not do an investigation and what we learned about how maybe the next one could end up being a little better. So let's dive right into it with the narrative, the extremely well-written narrative from my cousin Alejandro Thaddeus Rojas.
And I'll also say, continue to say it in the newscaster voice.
Yes. The moon was bright. And the air was cold during the witching hour, this night on Silver Cliff. The wind cut cold as it rode over the hills and danced through the gravestones on its way through the valley. Other than the cemetery, there was nothing but short prairie grasses to surf upon as it raced to the other side. While we wandered through the graveyard, hoping for a glimpse of a discarnate spirit loitering around its headstones, a nightbird sang to us. Its song was gently floating throughout the valley, carried by the wind. It felt like the scene from a spaghetti western. We were a band of solemn, quiet, and patient paranormal investigators, watching and waiting to experience the unique phenomenon that Silvercliff was known for. I had gotten permission from the Silvercliff Cemetery, the town of Silvercliff, for the group to come spend the night. So I contacted... I contacted the city council, actually, and told them who we were, what we were doing, and they were all for it. They set up, come down this time, such and such a time, let us know when you're going to be there, and we'll go from there. So when we got there, we had some media attention.
It was a party.
We had, and so we had some media contingent.
It was crazy. We tripled the population of that graveyard.
That
both of them.
Yeah.
Right. So that's important to note too. So there are actually two cemeteries. There's the Silvercliff Cemetery, which is the Catholic cemetery, and the Cross of the Assumption for the Protestants. Cross of the Assumption has a large white cross that appears to glow in the bright moonlight, and each is known for being host to glowing balls of light that meander from cemetery to cemetery and wander among the gravestones. The Silvercliff website, now defunct, describes the phenomenon. The cemetery is famous for its unexplained dancing blue lights seen on occasion and featured in the August 1969 National Geographic magazine Volume 136, Number 2, and these lights have been seen for many years. So that's actually one of the big things that got me interested in it.
Was the magazine article?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, interestingly, I've never actually read the article. I had never gotten to see the article. So what happened was, when I got in the Navy, I got out of the Navy, and I came home and I was like really interested in doing the paranormal stuff. My cousin had got me into MUFON and doing all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I really wanted to do the ghost hunt stuff. So I was like, some reason I remembered Silvercliff being a big deal. And I had done some internet searches about some other paranormal investigators who had gone down there, and I wanted to go. And they all referenced this article. All of the other organizations, all the investigators referenced this article, but I had never actually gotten to see it. And I got a hold of it. And what it is, a lot of the other articles kind of imply that it's a kind of a like the National Geographic did a full-on investigation of the of the lights, which isn't exactly the case.
No, it's like a bit of a footnote, right?
It is. It's at the end of the article.
Yeah.
It's the whole article is actually it's like a showcase of Colorado.
Yeah, that's so funny.
All over the state. The article culminates with the eerie lights of Silvercliff. And the author, Edward J. Linham, actually claims to have witnessed the lights firsthand. Wow. Now, he describes them as dim, round spots of blue-white light that glowed ethereally among the graves. Upon seeing them, he stepped forward for another look, and they vanished. The article goes on to explain that some of the theories, like phosphorescence from decaying wood in the crosses, sure, or lights from the town. And in the article, he notes that looking at the towns of West Cliff and Silver Cliff in the distance, the small clusters of lights seem far too faint to reflect the way out to the cemeteries. And the lights have been witnessed even when the fog was so thick that the towns were not visible at all.
Plus, generally, lights from the town stay in the town.
Yes.
Generally speaking.
Yes. So, noting, I don't remember a whole lot of old wooden crosses.
Do you? No, I don't either.
Yeah, no. It was pretty stony, right? It was just basic stones, headstones.
Yeah.
Right. It is hilarious that in this rundown of like, we went to beautiful Colorado, the Front Range was amazing, the raging rapids were beautiful. Oh, and at the end, we may have seen proof of life after death, but never mind that.
Right. Go to Colorado.
Go to Colorado for like, the buffalo.
Well, and it's weird too, because Silvercliff is really kind of really obscure and tucked away and hidden and very random.
Totally. It's a tiny town.
Yeah, it's like it's just a blip of a town. And it's just, and not many people really knew about it. And yeah, I thought that was kind of always really interesting about that as well.
It's actually, and two towns, like West Cliff and Silver Cliff together make up this conglomerate of
One for the Christians, one for the Catholics, and one for the Protestants.
Right. Have either of you looked into the foxfire or the phosphorescence?
Sure.
No.
Yeah. I mean, I have a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm aware of certain glowing funguses and, you know, will-o'-the-wisp type stuff, ball lightning, what have you.
That seems to be the prevailing skeptic argument there.
Sure.
So I did a little digging on that as well.
Cool.
And foxfire, according to the Encyclopedia Britannica, is a small, whitish, luminous fungi that commonly grows on deadwood in forests, particularly where the ground is moist and wet. These forms predominate in the tropics. The light of the fungi ranges from blue to green to yellow, and depending on the species, among the large luminous forms are ghost fungus, or Omphalus nidiformis. formerly Platurius lampis, which are actually, they're kind of pretty metal names for fungus, wouldn't you think?
Sure. Hell yeah.
Of Australia, the jack-o'-lantern, Olearius, known as Sleetobite illumidus. Yeah, Latin's not my strong suit. And of the United States,
you're doing great.
Is approximately 13 centimeters, about 5 inches in diameter. And there's not a lot of that in Silvercliff.
No, definitely not.
We're kind of
anti- not nearly as much as there used to be.
It's kind of anti-tropic. So pretty much the opposite of all of the conditions that are necessary for this fungus to grow are kind of not there.
True. True. Foxfire. Also the name of a 1996 Angelina Jolie vehicle. And that wasn't there either.
No. Wait.
Is there a chance this is Angelina Jolie's doing?
Not to be confused with Firefox either, which is a 1980-something movie about Clint Eastwood stealing a Russian Soviet, a psychic Soviet jet plane.
Nice. That sounds amazing, actually.
Think in Russian. Think in Russian. but again, none of it was there. None of it was there. And so, yeah, having heard about all this, we had to take a look for ourselves. Now,
sorry, not to interrupt, but wasn't there also a bit of information that, like, it being really dark? Because, like, I remember there being a conflict of, like, the moon being up and it being too bright.
Yeah, right. it was like a full moon, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
full moon, severe clear night, all the best of the worst for actually seeing the phenomenon.
Yes, seeing glowing objects.
In all my excitement, I apparently neglected that minor detail.
That's tough. That's an easy mistake to make, though.
Maybe planning a night when it's... Yeah, so the reports tend to... to report it as having the most activity on dark, cloudy nights with no moon.
Interesting.
And even a little bit of cloud cover, a little bit of fog even helps a little bit.
Sure. Well, I mean, honestly, and you know, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, but like, if this is some sort of natural phenomenon, if it is some sort of you know, maybe a ball lightning or something, maybe a little weather activity would even help to aggravate that condition, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some kind of static.
Right.
Some kind of a static charge. Yeah. Ball lightning is a good, like a better theory.
Sure.
Very dry, which a lot of static.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really cool. It's one of those things where it's like, people will be like, no, it's ghosts. They're called spook lights. But it's like ball lightning equally as fascinating to me. That's another thing that nobody knows what it's doing.
Right. Yeah. It's one of those like, it's a mundane scientific explanation. No, it's not.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
It's weird. You're telling me that lightning just balls up.
Yeah.
And dances around.
Weird little plasma orbs. I mean,
right.
You know, could have implications in... physics of the future, flying cars, come on, baby. Ghost-powered flying cars.
Yeah, ghost-powered flying cars. Put the ghost in the machine. Put him to work.
Yeah, why not?
So back to that whole media thing. And another don't do what Jason did.
Look, you're shouldering a lot of responsibility for this. Don't beat yourself up, man.
Yeah, drop
it. We all collectively were like, yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah. I remember, honestly, I remember being pumped that the media was there. I was like, oh, great. They're going to come out and do a story about it. I don't think it was until way later when we realized that it was like, there's like 50 people here.
Yeah. But the other cool thing about that was I was kind of really hoping if we did get something,
right?
That we've got media there to document it.
It would be amazing.
Right? Like, that would have been really, really awesome.
We'd have been national heroes, by God.
Proof. Finally discovered.
Right? That's the front page. Proof.
Which is kind of interesting. I think part of us all kind of secretly wanted that.
Oh, yeah, totally. You know,
Yeah, it's kind of, it's like, we're going to be the ones to catch the evidence.
I remember distinctly going down and there was, you know, almost kind of a vibe that was like, what if we see it, man? What if we get photographs of whatever this is?
Right.
And it's the next step.
What do we do then? Like, well, we've got college.
Yeah, yeah.
Help us, like, study it.
Anytime there is, like, you know, an area, like a stationary place where it's like, this is a place where weird phenomenon happens, like, that's so rare to have a place where you could potentially go and study it. It's almost like having, you know, like, ghosts in a box or right. some sort of paranormal phenomenon in a box. Like, we don't right. know when it's here, but sometimes it's here. That's amazing.
Kind of like Skinwalker Ranch.
Sure.
Or... What, we've come across a couple. Yeah, I don't want to, not excited to go run out to Skinwalker Ranch, though.
Just sure. Yeah. Oh, geez, I would be.
But I do kind of think I had in the back of my mind I was going to come home with, like, some spook lights in a jar. Like,
sure.
like lightning bugs or something.
You didn't get any? They had them in the gift shop there.
There was a gift shop?
Yeah, spook lights in a jar.
They're lightning bugs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's an interesting, you know, I mean, that could be a potential explanation. Is there some sort of extinct fauna that we don't know about that was causing Ooh. These lights?
That would be pretty cool, too. Yeah.
Maybe right. it's more a cryptozoological
right?
question than it is and paranormal.
Again, that was one of the reasons why I designed or I had the idea to make the organization be cross-disciplinary.
Sure.
Like what do ghost hunters do when they come across a cryptid or
yeah
the bigfooters out there with the when they get abducted by UFOs.
Sure.
That gets a whole and a lot of stuff people end up, like in case you didn't notice, there's a lot of the groups that tend to be very much in their own niche about things.
Sure.
Like the Bigfooters totally believe in Bigfoot, but think the UFOers are wing nuts and crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, everybody's gotta have someone else to pick on.
Yeah.
Make themselves feel good about it.
Right, we're the sane ones.
You guys are insane, spending all this time looking for UFOs when you could be looking for Bigfoot.
That's where the nuts and bolts are.
Maybe it's all a woven tapestry, man.
Yeah.
Maybe Bigfoot's driving those saucers, baby.
You know. Yeah. There's more than one person that has openly spouting about that.
Sure.
But that's another episode. We had some reporters down there with us. We had the Southern Colorado Public Radio. We had the Denver Post. We had the Wet Mountain Tribune and the MSU Denver Alumni Magazine. All articles of which are available online, and we'll put those in the show notes. So if you want to reference those, you're welcome to check those out. Although I think the Denver Post one was a little bit off topic.
Oh yeah, what in what sense?
In the sense like, Rick Nelson was tagging along with us, and because he's the old
that's
white
right.
guy, since he's the old white guy. The reporters totally latched on him as being the venerable investigator who brought the college kids down to investigate this strange thing.
Sure.
Like it was all. But that's which, fine.
Which, let's be clear, he did not.
Right.
Yeah. It was totally us. We organized it all.
He was just kind of along for the ride. But They got some good pictures of him. I'll say that. Nice one. So, all right. So what did we do when we got there after the interviews?
Well, we didn't have much time to set up. So I remember, like, we got our tent set up as quickly as we could. Because, like, it got dark pretty quickly because it took us a while. It took us longer to get there. So it was kind of one of those things, like, everything didn't work the way we had it planned. Like, we left later than we had anticipated. Mm-hmm. We got stuck in more traffic than we wanted. We got there later than we needed to. And then even with the interviews, it kind of was cut short because it's like, okay, now we got to, like, set up tent, get our equipment out, and start. So it was kind of like we were already starting with everything kind of falling apart.
Right. We did have, the plan though, once we did get set up, we set up strategically, we set up our tents in the two different quadrants of the cemetery so that we could have as much coverage as possible. And everybody was equipped with radios, audio devices, and we prepared the video and audio stuff for our remote stations too. So we had, basically, we just set up some, like, audio recorders on gravestones and left them alone. Set up some video cameras as remote stations, just kind of filming the cemetery. And then we kind of ran around with our radios back and forth between the gravestones and the different cemeteries, too.
Sure. Right?
Now, my cousin, Alejandro, noticed that he felt that the lights on the gravestones, because they were so reflective, the newer ones are very shiny, and that those easily reflected lights. Mm-hmm. Although the lights from the city are still pretty far away. The city, I call it. Yeah. And I personally couldn't get a good reflection unless I shined my light directly onto the stones. I guess we could have done some experiments with them, like testing some, like, lens flares or something into the camera. Kind of seems like Kevin probably would have thought to do something along those lines.
Yeah.
And I know that a lot of the other investigators had talked about the lights actually passing between the two cemeteries, which is pretty interesting too.
Yeah, little spook light exchange program.
Right. So what I found was pretty remarkable, though, was the acoustic situation in the valley there, right? So even though it's a bright full moon, clear, super clear night, we're not seeing any spook lights, but we're hearing stuff that is really intense. Like, just picture yourself out in the middle of a field between two cemeteries in rural Colorado at night, knowing that there's this spooky phenomenon happening. All of a sudden, you hear a brruh, brruh, brruh kind of thing right in front of you, and grunting sounds and all kinds of weird stuff that doesn't seem to be there. There's no wildlife directly there. And what we soon figured out was that there were cows. There were cows in the pasture, like right near.
Yeah, for
the
sure.
But
that
were,
was like my. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. No. Go ahead.
Well, and that was like the one of the things. Like, that's like the biggest memory that stands out. Like, the memory is pretty faded right now, but I remember. Maybe we didn't catch this thing, I don't know if you, Jordan and I talked about, like, werewolves or something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. We're just like, wouldn't it be cool if it was, like, a werewolf situation, or, like, all of a sudden we're hearing, like, this thing. And then I remember waking out of my tent, like, I was really tired, had a hard time sleeping because I was freezing and I didn't bring enough clothing, which, like, there's another thing that you should do when you're, like, investigating. And it was cows. And I was like, oh,
yeah,
cows.
I remember hearing that weird grunting because I, at a certain point, we were all just kind of meandering around the graveyard. I remember hearing that grunting sound and not, like, looking around and not seeing any cows immediately. but only later realizing that that's what it was. But for a while there, I was like, what was that? That was such a, that was the strangest thing that happened to me up to that point.
Right. And I feel like we figured out pretty quickly. I don't know. It didn't seem like it took too long to figure out. Like, that's distinctly the sound. Like, this is not a sound that should be here. And it sounds like a cow.
Right.
There aren't any cows here. So where are the cows?
Silent buggers. They're stealthy.
And something about the acoustics of this valley. Because not only that, so there is a pasture that's kind of off in the distance. But I don't know if the wind carries the voices or it sounded like, you know, that acoustic thing like in the Denver Public Library where you stand on one side and you say something and then you go to the other side and you can clearly, like, you just hear a whisper.
Yeah, totally.
And the acoustics, it's like a bowl. It like throws the sound right across.
Yeah.
All the science museums have this little experiment thing too. But for some reason, it's very prominent. It sounds like the cows are right on top of you, even though they're not. Also, ground owls.
Ground owls, baby. Love them.
Well, I didn't know. I thought ground owls were something that the dead milkman made up.
Right?
But totally. No, there's really such a thing as a burrow owl.
Heck yeah.
And we are west of Pueblo.
Big fan. What, one of my favorite owls, for sure.
The burrow owl?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They're little weirdos.
So there they are in the field. And, of course, they get spooked when these weirdo kids are running back and forth between the cemeteries.
Yeah, not to mention all the ghost lights. Probably freaked them out.
And the ghost lights. They're just minding their own business.
Sure.
And what's there but people? So that was pretty much the night. I feel like we spent a lot of time running around, kind of as I look back on it, I reflect on it, I hear the Benny Hill music going in my mind.
All right.
Like, people running into each other in the darkness. And morning comes and we had a good... What's that?
Because didn't we leave pretty early too?
Yeah. Yeah. We got up almost as... we got up pretty early.
Well, we walked around until like... How late would you say we were up walking around? I think I remember about 2 maybe.
Probably, yeah. About 2 a.m. So...
Yeah, getting audio, walking around with flashlights. This was before smartphones, kids. So we didn't have any apps or anything we could have used. And yeah, we didn't really see much. We heard grunting. We heard we heard the cows, and a lot of people walking around. Basically,
mm-hmm.
No, not a light was seen.
Not an anomalous one. But we always did say we were gonna go back.
Mm-hmm.
Gonna try to go back when it when conditions were more conducive.
Sure. I guess that's the question then. If you were to go back, what would you do differently?
Well, I would be a little more low key about it.
Way low key, probably.
I would probably actually post a couple stations in between the two cemeteries.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe even like a, maybe even just like a full-on video recording of that area for most of the night.
Do a couple remote stations. Like remote stations for a survey, or like you can sit there with the cameras.
Mm-hmm.
Or a little bit of both. Also, I feel like the way I've developed or the way that I have learned all of the paranormal investigating that I've learned since then, I feel like with the exception of like maybe our Tivoli investigation and some of the other stuff in 9th Street,
mm-hmm.
that the more equipment we bring to it, the more people and the more equipment we bring in, the less experiences we tend to have.
Sure. Isn't that strange?
the more minimal it tends to be, right? Like, I've gotten better stuff with just a basic audio recorder. Like those EVPs we got in the Tivoli, that was a remote station with an audio recorder that the video blanked out and the audio just picked up some EVPs. There was nobody physically there when it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Here, we've got a situation where we had a lot of people and a lot of equipment, and nothing happened. Also, environmental conditions weren't on point for what the phenomenon said to be most active at. So obviously, I would pick a night with a new moon, and
sure,
you know, trying to plan around the weather is foolhardy, but at least we can plan around going down with the new moon and be a little more simple and minimal with the equipment. The sound thing, again, was kind of interesting. Like, we keep going back into the sound idea, and some of the best evidence, I guess, that we've collected has been sound, besides videos and photos kind of stuff. But I guess just to kind of experience it and just be a little more low key about it. I feel like also being respectful of kind of the place and the people.
Sure. Of course. I think honestly, to do something like this correctly, if it's the sort of, if the major area of traffic seems to be between the two graveyards and it doesn't really need to have anyone walking around at all. I think if you really wanted to do it right, you would pick a night, maybe even a couple of nights, I think 2-3 nights, when the conditions seem to be right. Check it out. I don't know. Is there any, have you read anything about, like, time of year? Is it more prevalent in the summertime or?
Not particularly. It just seems to be more the darkness.
Like, sure. You could post up one spot and just watch a couple of key locations. Nobody walking around even at all. Mm-hmm. And just cause you don't need to be there for that particular thing to occur necessarily.
No, you don't.
Or do you, right?
Well, I think it could, like, it'd be hard. There's so many variables that come into play. It'd be interesting, like a long-standing investigation, to catch something, kind of do it with both.
Sure.
Well, but I think I agree. Like, just kind of like record and let it go.
Right. But so this becomes our I guess, psychoreactive phenomenon.
Sure.
Like, as we always come back to it, it's like, do you need humans in order to interact with a phenomenon? Which would also be like a really cool experiment to do in itself as well. You know, is it an atmospheric phenomenon, which is really interesting in itself, or do people somehow need to be involved in interacting with it for it to occur? And then what would the evidence look in terms of that difference?
Sure. That's a really good point. It would be cool to even maybe plan a trip down there during some weather to see if maybe that, you know, kick something off. Whoa. and then maybe do a walkthrough, and then maybe do a night of just absolutely hands off nothing.
Mm-hmm. Like, it would take multiple surveys with some really intentional, not just, all right, check Silvercliff.
One and done.
Right?
It's such a tricky one too. Go on.
Well, I think that's the one thing about, like, investigations in general, but I think, like, as kind of, like, newbies in this situation that we were, a lot of times you're like, it's kind of like, oh, X-Files, they went and did this one investigation and never came back to it. When in reality, if you want any really good evidence or data, you kind of have to kind of keep coming back at it. You need, like, a data set.
Absolutely.
And so I think that was, like, the biggest thing I kind of learned from it, was this idea of, like, okay, so we did this one time. But really being mindful about, okay, so how do we set up an investigation later? How do we go into a space? How do we do follow-up?
Yeah.
Yeah, so what's everybody doing? What are you doing next week?
Let's do it, guys. Let's move to Silver Cliff. We'll set up a permanent a field laboratory out there. It's such a weird phenomenon too, because even if you were to get a picture of it, you got a picture of lights that are stationary. Mm-hmm. If you would need to get a video of it, and even then, who knows that it's the type of thing that can show up on video? Who knows? And then if people were to see it, they'd be like, well, this is obviously some kind of After Effects thing. It's almost one of those ones where psychoreactive or not, you kind of have to be there.
Yeah.
Well, and that's like the idea of like what you experience is at the end of the day, kind of the ultimate mm-hmm. thing. Whether you can prove it or not, it's just sort of like, well, I had this experience.
Sure.
Don't know what it is, but it happened.
Yeah.
And I guess that's that's kind of a nice way to end it too, because ultimately, like, what are we going to do if we catch it? Right. This is the ultimate question of a paranormal investigator. What do you do if you get the big one? What do you do? And even in the National Geographic article, although the author expresses some skepticism, also some like hope for that mystery too, like kind of hoping that like, let's just leave it be, let it be a mystery.
I've definitely come to a place with my interest in these sort of things where it's like maybe everybody's looking for a certain type of truth when it comes to these phenomena, and it kind of just has to be on a personal level. Even if it's just for me, even if I just am the only one who gets a glimpse of that truth, I'm okay with that. I like that.
That's kind of where I've evolved. In a similar way, I've evolved too. It's kind of like my own personal interaction with it. And, you know, there's a lot of spirituality and philosophy and all that kind of stuff, which, you know, that's a whole topic for another episode.
Sure.
But I think you're right. I think it does come down to a kind of a personal interaction with this phenomenon.
Like, yeah, man.
I have no more desire or need to get a bunch of pictures to try to prove to the world that this thing exists.
Like, sure, maybe it doesn't matter if the papers believe.
Right. I believe it, and I know that I'm interacting with people who do. I know that I don't maybe necessarily know exactly definitively what it is. I have an idea of what I believe it to be,
sure.
And I feel good about that. And, I want to pay respect to that in all aspects of what I do. So, when we get calls, we've been getting calls for to help people out, right? Like I think I've got a poltergeist in my house. And we go check it out and find like, okay, cool. Well, whether there is a poltergeist in your house or not, you believe that there is. And what can we do to work out whatever needs to happen to make you feel good and happy about
your house guest.
Yeah. Or about living your life, right?
Sure.
Those satanic altars in the closet. But maybe that has something to do with
what's
going on out there. Or not.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's all just elevated atheism.
Who knows?
Who knows? But I feel like, as usual, here we are coming to the end of the podcast, and we are no closer to an answer. If maybe even farther away from the answers than when we began.
That's our goal. The more you know, the more questions that you have. And the more you think you know, the more you know, you don't know what you don't know.
There you go.
Exactly. And so thanks for coming out here all the way to Denver.
Yeah, great to be there. Here in the internet.
And we're going to have to do this again. I hope to join you. Yes, I hope you to join us once again on this podcast. Right. And can I talk about the other thing?
Oh, Yeah, you know, I used to do a podcast called Werewolf Radar with some Denver comics. It is the world's premier paranormal preparedness podcast. And it is we're starting to think about maybe bringing some episodes back. So hopefully that'll be forthcoming this year. But go listen to the old ones and review them and leave reviews.
Review them. Comment, like,
comment,
share,
and review. Exactly.
All that cool stuff. To them as well as us. So, and this podcast is written and produced by the Crypto Science Society and its members. Special thanks to Eddie Norrie for the graphic design work. Podcast is sponsored by Turnipage Bookshop. Go check them out at turnipage.com. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Your support is greatly appreciated. If you like this podcast and would like to hear more, please subscribe, share, and let us know what you think in the comments. Find us on CastBox and now Google Play. And if you like the podcast, you'll probably like the YouTube channel, so go check it out. And you can email us at cryptosciencesocietyx@gmail.com. We're also on Instagram and what's that other one? The Facebook? Oh, yeah, that one. But no Twitter. Absolutely not.
Come on, get on Twitter. It's fun.
No.
We'll, like, get in, get out. Yeah. Maybe. We'll see. But from there, that's pretty much all we have. Check out all the references and special articles in the show notes, and check out Alejandro's article on our blog at journalsciencecrypto.wordpress.com. So thanks again, and we'll see you next time.
Cool.
Cool.